This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
Hey, everybody, it's Gary Vaynerchuk. Super excited to be with all of you. Haven't done a podcast in a long, long, long time. Obviously, Tea with Gary V was heavy on my mind with the pandemic. And we've been doing creative things with the podcast. But today, an actual live interview, which is really exciting to me. And we come strong with an incredible guest with a new book. And someone that I don't think needs much of an introduction, but I'm going to allow him to say hello and who he is, and then we're going to get into the book, and then we're going to shoot the shit about a bunch of things, maybe a little football, wine, and definitely a lot of what the book is about and why. And so, Matthew, it is a pleasure to introduce you to the show. Please tell everybody who you are and what the book is about.
Here we go. Good to be here with you, Gary V. Yeah, McConaughey here. Went away to the desert for 52 days of solitary confinement, walked out of there with a book. It's based on 36 years of diaries I've been keeping. It's called Green Lights. And it's stories, people, places, prescribes, poems, prayers, and a whole lot of bumper stickers. sort of based on a 50 years of chronological narrative of my life, and it's interspersed sort of with flashbacks and flash forwards of those prescribes, poems, and prayers that come in and either call back to the story you just got out of or propel you into the next story that you're going into. It's ways of seeing is what it really is. That
perspective
very much. Yeah. Much more an approach book and a playbook than a memoir.
And the name, does it allude to, you know, going forward, like yes, yeah. Culture, like, you know, because when I heard the name, I was like, ooh, I like that. You know, I got a little bit pissed. You know, my Jets love affair, I always talk about green. I was like, shit, I could have definitely gone with that kind of route.
Le'Veon.
Yeah. So don't even get me started. But he's a red light now, a chief. Is that a little bit of like where you went with it?
Well, so here we go. What I ended up with is believing that every red and yellow light turns green eventually in life. All right. So we love green lights. Yes. They affirm our way. Go. Yes. Proceed. Attaboy. We don't like yellows and reds. They slow us down or stop us. But I found out that a lot of the yellow and reds, when is it that we notice that that there's a green light within the yellow and the red? Meaning right now, there's no green light with Le'Veon Bell leaving your chest. But
I apologize because you get me fired up. My green light with the Jets is actually my macro professional mission, which is like, okay, well, this sucks, but good news. I'm going to buy them. And when I do, I'm going to win fucking Super Bowls. So that's my green light within the red.
Okay, there's your green light.
Now, that one is a marathon versus a sprint. But to your point, I'm definitely picking up what you're putting down because sometimes I see the green in, I mean, I see the green in the fucking yellow every time.
Right.
The green and a red is a little bit more of thinking, sometimes an hour, sometimes a year, sometimes a decade.
Sometimes on our deathbed, sometimes maybe our great-great-grandkids figure it out. I don't know. Some of them
like
last a long time. But when is it that we notice? And I think the tool that I talk about in the book is when faced with the inevitable, get relative. So one thing is, when do you deem a situation inevitable?
Yep.
And then the other art is when and how do you get relative with that situation? You either persist through it because you want to get what you want, or you pivot, or you hold up the white flag and go, nope, I'm fighting another day for something else.
How much is self-esteem a layer, a piece, a framework of even making any of this possible?
Well, I guess it's, I never thought about it, but it has to be a large part of it.
Because it's funny, right? Notice where I went, right? And I like that you paused and gave it some thought. Like, to me, I'm listening and I'm already hyped and I knew this would have plenty of energy. I'm just obsessed with self-esteem because I think that people fall in love with yellow and red because of insecurity.
Yeah.
And I think people front the green because they're putting up fake bravado and ego because of insecurity. Sure. And I think a lot about the foundation of self-esteem allowing to triple green light in this situation.
Sure. I mean, absolutely. How about self-esteem and the ego, if you don't mind me parlaying those two, which I'm a fan of both. How do you have judgment without that? How do you have any identity? Yeah, I mean, self-confidence, self-esteem, self-reliance, awareness of self. Then you got to have all those to handle the yellow and the reds and not, again, lay down and wallow in them And oh, I love it over here.
Because what everything you just talked about, I was, you know, giving you some room because I'm going to get bombarded for cutting you off because that's how I roll. So I'm trying to be better, evolve in my older age. All of that leads to accountability, right? When you talk about all that self-work, I'm like, right. And then that parlays into accountability, and accountability actually makes you really fucking happy instead of the reverse.
Hey, this I'm sitting down eating the same dinner with you, man. I mean, it's this idea part of this choice about how to find green lights and create green lights, which obviously we can create green lights tomorrow for us by our choices today. So this idea that sometimes we say it's a responsibility and freedom are a contradiction, which they're not. There is a responsibility to freedom, and there is a freedom in responsibility.
Yes.
I mean, delayed gratification is what I'm talking. I'm a big fan of. I love teeing myself up, being cool to my future self, whether it's the simple thing of putting the coffee in the damn filter tonight or tomorrow morning when I'm groggy, all I got to do is push the button. Mm. And I go, ah, nice play, McConaughey. Way to be cool. You know, or whether it is how I choose to be a husband to my wife or a father to my children.
And how they speak about you behind your back in 21 years.
Yeah. And, right? You know, the end of let's dive into this delayed gratification, which I can tell you.
I'm obsessed in.
Big. I mean,
I'm obsessed with the journey. I like the game way more than the fucking trophy.
The trophy doesn't really exist, though.
No shit.
You know, we're just achieving on the way to unachievable the whole way is the way I see it. I mean,
one of the reasons I bring up the death of very iconic people, Prince I use a lot, others, is I try to use that to paint a picture to people of like, you can have a trillion trophies and then it's just all over. Like you get 24 hours in social media, you get a little hashtag trend, people play their favorite clip, they quote a couple of your favorite things, and literally it's a week later and everyone's fucking on their life. So what the fuck are you chasing trophy for?
The result, process. So I bring this up. I say, I'm a fan of doing this a lot too. I like to, before doing a movie, say, sit down with the producers and directors, hey, what's the poster look like?
Yeah, I love it. Right. I love where you're going. Right, reverse engineering. That's right, reverse
headline.
Engineering.
So still listen to this. Let's all ask ourselves, what's our eulogy? Which is gonna forever introduce us after we're gone. That's inevitable. The relative part is this resume of living we got going right now, which is going to write that story that's going to introduce us for fucking ever when we're gone. So
this is talk about sharing the same meal. Take me to a couple different places because we'll get back to this. You know, so much makes sense to me about my observations and interactions with you right now. Now that we've gone to this place. Talk to me about the book from a different way because I have we have a big audience on this and there's a lot of different people. And now I'm going to focus on the people that are thinking about books.
Sure.
Did you always want to write one? Is it as simple as you went for this? Because I was aware of that little adventure you took. Did it really hit there? What would you like to happen because of it? How much around legacy? And you know, like what's the poster? Like, what would you like to happen? Like, give me the selfless and selfish, you know, altruistic and like personal makeup blend of this for you.
Absolutely. And we'll get into selfish and selfless later on. Those two are
you like that one, right? Yeah, I'm about that too. I get it.
Still redefining it to the world. I'm a big fan of it. So listen, I kept diaries for 36 years. In my life.
Just because I'm going to double click because this is fun and we got a little time. Why did you start day one? What happened?
Well, 14 years old, probably started it because, you know, Gretchen Donnelly broke up with me in my heart. I went to my diary like most people go to a diary or journal, whatever you want to call it. So I went to a diary for my first years of when I was lost, trying to figure shit out. Oh, heartbroken. Damn, figure this out. Why do I got pimples? What's going on? What's this pubic hair coming in? Why won't mine come in sooner? Blah, 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 you know, stuff like that. So then it started off with going there to figure things out. And I get in my 20s. I got some great relationships going. School's cranking. I got a job. I'm rolling, catching green lights. I remember saying, hey, you better keep writing in your diary right now while you're succeeding, while you're rolling, while you're catching. And my hunch was you're going to get in a rut again. And you're going to need something to look back on to recalibrate. Mm-hmm. I mean, sure enough, I found a rut, as we all do. I was able to go back to those diaries and go, what were your habits when you were rolling, when you were catching green lights? Where, who were you hanging out with? What time were you going to bed? Where, what were you eating? Where were you going? What were your morning rituals? Oh, you spent a little more time with yourself before you engage with the world. Oh, I got you. Oh, you took that little while. Okay. And I went, it got me recalibrated, got me back on the rails, and it helped me get out of certain rut and find green lights again, find my frequency again. So kept those diaries, looked at them all. 7 or 8 categories came out that I mentioned earlier, from the people, places, prescribes, poems, prayers, and a whole lot of bumper stickers. And then the theme of green lights started to emerge out of those categories. I noticed how I'd engineered green lights in my life with certain choices I'd made. I'd teed myself up for more Saturdays in my future, giving myself no more reasons to look over my proverbial shoulder to see what I'd left behind, which gave me less stress moving forward and gave me more presence in green lights. So
dwelling, the elimination of dwelling.
Well,
I'm fascinated on people's inability to understand that there is no time machine. This notion of I wish, you know, it's imperative to learn from pattern recognition, mistakes, strengths, yeah. Imperative.
Yes.
Dwelling, looking back and dwelling and spending all of that prevent defense using football, because I love it. That's something I'm desperate to push on people. Like, it's, you're just, I know you made the wrong decision. Good news.
Right.
There's absolutely zero chance you're going to go into a time machine. So take the learning and just go on fucking offense and eat shit for another 6 years to give yourself a chance to get to that same fucking road. And this time make the fucking right call.
I think it's all offense. I think every step is affirmative, even if it's considered going backwards. Look, going back and looking at 50 years of my diaries was an intimidating idea. I said, oh, shit, I'm going to be embarrassed. I'm going to be shamed. I'm going to feel guilty. I'm going to be you arrogant prick at this time in life. I felt all those things, but mostly I ended up laughing at some of these.
You just took the words. I was going to say, I'm curious the first time you just laughed your ass off.
Well, I mean, stuff I was like, oh, my God, I ended up laughing. I looked at stuff I was ashamed for. I was like, oh, well, you kind of already forgave yourself for that. You moved on, you know, and so a lot of the book is about me going off into solitude at times, which I think is a good practice for everyone to do. And the reason I bring that up is because it's attached to the word dwell, but it's not. And it plays into this, that example you just said, 6 years, go through hell and get out of it. Every time I go away on my own with my backpack on my own, the first 12 days are hell. I do not like the company I'm keeping.
How many times have you done that?
6 to 8 to 10.
And are you saying that the prerequisite to you doing that is often the fact that you know you need it, and what you're doing is reconciling with yourself in that early part?
Well, I need memory to catch up. I'm in a world where I'm getting too much frequency. I've got no demarcation between events. I'm kind of playing on autopilot and I'm doing okay, but my head and my heart do not have an auto bond between them. There's a bit of a dirt road and I got to clean that up. I got to feel my feet on the ground. Spiritually, maybe I feel a little, and so I need to go off and I need to let memory catch up. I need to go listen to myself and find some discernment into my own judgment. What do I want from me? What's going on in the world? What's the reverb here? What am I giving to it? What's it giving back to me? Get some clarity there. Happens, you know, especially when things are rolling. This is usually coming out of major green lights where I need to go away to go, is that green light plugged into a battery?
Have you learned that off those epic green lights that if you don't go do that, you crash from the energy and it puts you into, like, you were off of this high, it was rolling, this was so delicious. And then in that in between, which is completely always natural for all of us, that the drop off it doesn't feel great. So instead of doing that, you're going to go on this offense and go take that backpack trip, and it's gonna make a productive time instead of kind of coming down from the project or thing. Yeah.
Well, the come down will be when you look up and you go, oh, all the affluence that you noticed, half the green lights were plugged into, you know, 2-volt batteries, and they were never gonna last very long. And it's going away to get rid of the ones that are plugged into the toy batteries and going to the ones that, oh, that's solar power. That's gonna burn forever. That's burning after I'm gone. Which takes you back to So what I hope comes out of the book, man, I hope it can help people find their freedoms. I think people are gonna laugh their ass off. It's some killer stories. I did find out that the stories.
Did you work with a ghostwriter? I work with a ghostwriter for my books because I'm very conscious scream and it needs to be structured for me. Or were you able to get there?
No, I went solo. I had a ghostwriter. right at the beginning, Stephen Kruitz. He was from the New York Times. He had written a cool article on me. I reached out to him. We got together one time. New York Times pulled him off the project, which then me and my wife, I looked in the mirror and I was like, that's the fucking best gift I could have been given. And she goes, yeah, get your ass out of here. Take your journals. Don't go back to your house. So packed up steaks and bourbon and headed off. And so what I hope, man, people get out of it. I think people are going to see some killer stories. I am a pretty good storyteller. Now, the thing I did learn is that I've performed a lot of these stories. And I thought if I just transcribed my best performance to the page, that'd be the best written word on the page. It was not. It needed to be about 30% shorter. You got to pick a word out. You don't get the lilt of my voice going up to you. Up here comes the punchline. You don't get any of that. So I think people are going to find some wisdom bombs in here. I picked up a lot along the way. I think like I say there's a lot of bumper stickers in
here.
What
was that to make this fun? Because I know the process of book and it's really, really fun. Who, any story you can share with us that you haven't shared yet, or you have, of somebody reading it for the first time, your inner circles, the first 15, 20, 30 people, and anything that like either collectively they latched onto and or an interesting observation from someone that was fun for you. You were like happy, your cousin or your best friend or your wife.
Yeah.
Anything cool like that in the first kind
well,
of?
Well, I mean, I got a call yesterday from Don Phillips, and he's a character in the story. He's the casting director. I introduced myself in Austin, Texas in the summer of 1992. Who later on at 3 a.m. after we got kicked out of a bar and we're smoking a joint on the way home in a cab, he says, you ever done any acting? And I come to this address tomorrow morning. And there's three lines in this character, which ended up being 3 weeks work in a film called Days Confused. And I moved into it, slept on his couch when I moved out to L.A. And he's the guy who, after about a month where I'm down to about $800 in my pocket. And I'm telling him, hey man, I need to get an agent. And he snapped at me and gave me one of the best lessons I've ever learned. He goes, this town smells you needy. You're fucking done. He goes, what you need to do is get the hell out of here and go off and get lost somewhere. Go to Europe, go ride a goddamn motorcycle, something, but quit thinking about making it in Hollywood because this place smells you needy. You're done. He was right. That was one of the guys who actually a rite of passage of a guy pushing me out of wanting something so bad. And he's right. Mm-hmm. Got to come in needy. So I headed
give
off
up the leverage.
You come in needy.
You give up the leverage.
I showed back in Hollywood a month later. I'm not even thinking about getting an agent. Well, yeah. Now it's time to go get an agent. Cause I'm like, well, buddy, you know, I got stories. I just came from somewhere, man. You know, and so
Matthew, my Hollywood, like my knowledge in sports, uncomfortably deep. I'm much weaker in like movie culture and like acting culture. I obsessed with Dazed and Confused, like one of my favorite movies. And I'm not even a big movie guy.
Yeah.
There were so many of you in that film. I love those coming of age movies to begin with. This is probably a very basic question. I'm sure people like booing at me right now as they're listening to this. Did you get instant acclaim from that? And that was huge leverage. Was it a slow burn? No. Was it instant? Like what happened? Like movie comes out.
You got
like,
me in the door.
Got you in the door.
It got me in the door. It got me.
Got people curious. Got people curious, right?
Yeah. Well, it gave me something for my resume. You know, the agent's not going to take a meeting with you.
But
don't.
But it wasn't like you, like, it wasn't like tons of people reaching out and said, okay.
No.
It was actually, more of a simmer. It wasn't an explosion.
I had to find one agent. And three said no.
Okay. Even with that, where I thought you were fucking killer. I mean, that staying the same age line is like one of the great fucking lines ever.
I call that a launch pad line. That's the line.
Fucking insane.
I ended up working 3 weeks, but now I worked off of basically because Richard Linklater wrote that line.
Oh, is that true? That was the line?
That's the line.
Yeah, I mean,
who the fuck's that guy? There's an encyclopedia on that guy if he believes. That's what he loves about high school girls. He gets older than same age. That guy, there's a huge, very thick book on him.
Yes, for sure.
But anyway, I get a call from Don Phillips yesterday, and he's in the book. And mind you, he's in the book where
How often do you talk to Don in real life now? Like it could run hot and cold, like sometimes
every,
6 months?
Every couple of months we check in. Every couple of months. And we met back in 92. But he's in the story, you know, I mean, about I show up at his house when I'm first pulled out to Hollywood on the 26-hour drive from Texas, and I show up, and he doesn't answer the door, and I keep beating on the door. He shows up at the door with a boner, and it's basically like, hey, can he come back later? And I'm like, no, dude, I just drove 26 hours. So there were things in the book, and I called him before them being in the book. I said, look, I'm going to tell the truth of our stories. He's like, great, okay. We read the book, and I don't know. He's older. Sometimes people get older in their life, and they look back, and they're like, I didn't do that. Don't talk about me like that. Well, he didn't. He loved it. He goes, man, the book is so humble. It's so true. It's and it's people this. I've had a lot of people tell me this. It's a Hollywood. Am I a celebrity? Yeah. Do I tell stories about some of Hollywood? Yeah. But a lot of people have told me this. One of their favorite things about the book is what it is not.
I love that.
I'm not a disher. I don't dish on people. I don't tell bedroom stories. And I always say this. That's why there's doors on the bedroom. It's none of your business. It wouldn't be decent. Mm. There are people that I could have named them in the story and would have thrown mud in their face. But I don't have a problem with them. That was who they were. We've forgiven each other. We moved on. I'm not gonna. I didn't play the
stories. No names, but you create the story. Have any of those people reached out?
Yes.
That's cool.
Yeah, they have, and in a cool way.
Cool way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the more you know, the there's people. Like I said, there's people, there's places. Everyone's. I don't dish on anybody. I didn't feel like that. That isn't what I wanted it to be. When I first went to write the book, like I understand, I got some equity as an actor. Somebody's going to buy the book because McConaughey wrote it. Some people won't buy it just because McConaughey wrote it. Either way, I remember saying this: hey, can you put words on a page that are worthy of being signed by Anonymous, but at the same time be only you could have written it.
That's cool.
The idea of where I was headed.
I have a great question that I'm curious about. How is promoting a book, like doing this show, I've seen some other stuff on social. How is it different than promoting a movie? Any tidbit there that's kind of funny? Anything you've kind of picked up on?
Here's my favorite thing. I wrote this one, I directed it, I produced it.
Right.
I don't have to prepare. Look, I've gone out and I'm honored with what I was able to put out. Yeah. I've chosen to sell movies before where maybe I didn't love the movie and it wasn't getting a great reaction. And I can tell if you saw it, you go, yeah, interesting stuff. It was cool. So now, anyway, McConaughey,
right. You've got to be a professional. Right.
You didn't pick out two things that I'm saying that I wrote down that are my positive sort of go-to things to say about the movie. But now I don't have to prepare for any of this.
I actually have a fun question. The movie that when you read it, and this might be a tough question. I truly don't have a good sense of Hollywood culture enough to know if this is a tough question or not, but I'm going to ask it because I'm just genuinely curious. Because as a businessman, some of the ideas I have in my head to then see how I executed it, mm-hmm. I'm like, this sucks. And I control a lot of that. As an actor, you don't. Literally, you thought everything was going to be epic and then it just didn't post well. You know, like the post-production, you're like, fuck, sure. Really? What movie were you most hyped about? And then you were like, fuck, man, that didn't go. And then in reverse, what movie were you? And by the way, it might be something you thought was going to be an A++++ and was a B-. I'm not talking A and F.
Yeah.
And then in reverse, what movie were like you most, like you were most, and whether it was your age and your wife. What's the reverse? So yeah, which one did you come in the hottest and we're like, eh. And which one were you coming in with the most like, I don't know, and like, holy fuck.
Well, all right, let me answer this.
I'm curious.
All right, I could say this, man, to answer the second half. Dallas Buyers Club was a movie we made for $4.9 million in 25 days.
Yeah, I remember.
That was a movie that almost like never got made, and we willed that into existence by now asking permission.
And that movie, again, I claim I don't know a lot, but because it was such an epic one, and you were fucking insane, and it was so epic, that movie was bouncing around as a story for a while, right?
I was attached to it for about 5-6 years before, but no one would make it with me. No one wanted to make it.
Making it, again, my lack of knowledge, just putting up the money to do it?
No one's going
to
pay for the money. Period. Yeah. Period piece age drama with McConaughey in the lead? No. He's rom-com shirtless guy. That doesn't make any sense. No way.
Right. Right, because you were coming off of that.
Yeah.
Kind of back. Yeah, you were in that place. Yeah. And by the way, as an actor, is that important? Like, are you sitting there and saying, fuck, if I don't show some other side, I'm rom-com to the end?
Well, check this out, and you'll see when you check out this part of the book, and it's part of those affirmative ways to not mm-hmm. to dwell, but to go into a penance to get out the other mm-hmm. side. I look up and notice I'm rom-com, romantic comedy guy, and I'm owning this because I'm like, you're damn right. Those rom-coms are paying for the house that I'm renting on the beach that I'm going shirtless on. Mm-hmm. Guilty fact, mm-hmm. you know. So, but I did notice. Well, I want to do some other things. No, you can't do that. And I noticed. I was like, oh, the industry and the public are. Nothing other than rom-com shirtless guy on the beach. That's when I went, okay. Well, if I can't do what I want to do, I got to quit doing what I've been doing.
That's right.
And I went off back down to Texas and hit out and called my agent, money people, and everybody said, I'm not doing those anymore. 20 months, nothing. No work.
20 months?
Nada. 20 months.
And are peeps getting antsy around you? Like, hey, motherfucker, do one.
I called it early on. I mean, I dropped tears to make the decision because I was like, I even thought about I would change careers. Now, mind you this, at that time, this is when Hollywood really got the message. About 6 months into that sabbatical of saying, I'm not doing those. An offer comes in for a script at $8 million. I said, no, thank you. They come back at $10 million. I say, no, thank you. They come back at $12.5 million. They come back at $14.5 million.
No.
I say, let me read that script again. I read the script, Gary. Guess what? Now, it was the exact same words as the original offer, but I read that script again and it was better written. It was, it was so better written.
$14.5 million. And you did it?
But I said no.
You said no. Was that movie made? Wait, real quick, for fun. I love this shit. Was that movie made?
No.
No.
Did not make it. They did not make it.
Hey, by the way, on that note, one of my other favorite things about Hollywood that I don't know the stories the way I know sports, anything that you passed on that went on to slay and the actor fucking crushed, any of the, you have any of those in your?
I got there. I was offered a role in LA Confidential.
Mm.
And I don't remember if it was the, I don't remember if it was the Russell Cole role or the guy role, but I loved that movie. And that was a really good one. I was off
timing. Was it money? Was it you weren't interested? Like what ended up happening?
It was right around the time when A Time to Kill was coming out. So all of a sudden I go from a weekend. I go from a Friday before A Time to Kill comes out, which is the movie that came out that sort of, I was the lead in. It was a big studio film. The Friday before that comes out, I'm wanting to do any 100 of these scripts you're offering, but you're telling me, Hollywood's telling me 99 times, no, one of them you can do. Well, Monday, 60 something hours later, it inverted. 99 out of these 100 you can do, yes. And so
It was that.
Whoa, wait a minute. What am I supposed to do with all these yeses? How do I get some discernment and discrimination in these yeses? I don't know. 3 days ago, I would have done any of these. Now you're telling me I can do all of them. I need more than 24 hours in a day, and they're not giving it. So I said I passed because I just wasn't sure. I wasn't sure a lot of stuff at that time. So yeah, movies. Here's the thing with me on movies. I've never done or been a part of a piece of art that actually met my expectations.
Do you think you ideologically decided it will never happen because of the way the machine works? Like I kind of weirdly understand what you just said, which is why I'm going to where I'm going with this question. Do you believe that's because you were observant enough to understand the macro and thus immediately deemed it will never happen?
No, I think we may be saying the same thing. What I'm saying is earlier when I said there's no such thing as a trophy. I've done some things have been different and better than I thought they would be, but nothing has ever been, nor has any performance I've ever done gone like, perfection.
Now, what about you watching someone else, you know, in the cocoon of you being in the industry, because I'm sure your relationship with the industry ebbs and flows. It's like me with wine, but in it, when you were really observing, did you ever watch a performance that say and said, my Jesus fuck, like what the fuck was that?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
But really, 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 because there's incredible performances. I know that, but like from your perspective, because it's subjective, curious what hit your radar is like, fuck.
Yeah. You know, let me just say this. I like making movies more than I like watching them. I haven't even seen all the ones I've been in, and it's not because of any, we were talking earlier about that gap between what we want to do and what we actually get done. All right. There's a gap between what I want to do, what we do in a raw performance, and what's actually getting recorded on the camera. Then there's a gap between what's recorded in the camera and what's edited. And then there's a gap between what's edited and what's in the final picture.
That's right.
Tie back into like what's different about the book tour. The example I just said is four filters away from the raw expression.
Where is it?
This is one filter away because it's just a written word. You and I right now is the filterless. Stand-up comedy is the filterless.
That's why I love it so much. That's why even the way I give keynotes has nuances of it, because it's the most fucking unfiltered.
That's it. That's the nectar. That's the really straight one-on-one without a filter translation.
Have you ever cried when your favorite sports team lost a game? For real?
No.
What's the most pain you ever felt in a loss in sports?
The most pain I ever felt in a loss.
While you're thinking, I'm going to buy you a few seconds. I cried multiple times, in like 6 to 12 times a year in sports up until 22 years old, and then just stopped. I cried when Garrison Hurst broke off a 98-yard run against the Jets in overtime in 1998. In week one of the NFL season, I literally cried. And I think, and that was the last time, by the way. And I wonder if I realized somewhere in that moment that I'm 23 years old. It's week one. It's week one.
Oh my God. You must be crying a lot now.
Oh man, it's real rough right now. But honestly, it's funny. This might really strike you. I'm a huge sports fan. The Rangers in 94, and in the end, New York Rangers in 94, and the Yankees in 96 became my first two championships. You know, I started in 82 with all four teams, and literally, the second they both won their championships, I basically have not watched a single game. Like, I've watched a little bit here, and I've never watched, I don't know if I think I've watched a complete game of either team since their champion, all journey.
Heard.
Which is wild ass shit. You know, it's one thing to be like, kind of passive after a championship. Most people double down after a championship.
Yeah.
Completely, like, and I don't say it with a badge of honor. I'm just fascinated by how real that is to me.
Well, what's more, you know, I understand what you're talking about. I mean, the trophy, the championship is the noun. It's static. It's got a period at the end of it. The getting to it is the verb.
Oh, it's the best. By the way,
is emotion. You know, what's more?
Why do you think I like the Jets so much? It's so fun to be this year.
You may have.
I'm the happiest.
You've got good job security with enjoying this Jet shit.
That's true. Now, talk to me about wine a little bit. I know that, you know, we've through the years have talked about that. Like, where are you in that journey? Like, you like it? You don't, obviously bourbon. You talk a lot about it. You love that. Like, where do you sit with wine? If anyone,
red guy. I'm intermediate guy. I've been introduced. I've got friends that know a whole lot more about wine than I do that turn me on too.
And you, like a lot of others, enjoy that 6 guy, 10 people together. Like, that wine night is like a fun night for you. Like,
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like I said, I like to, you know, I'm also a fan of a little bourbon and some tequila as well. But no, come on.
In a finals match, bourbon versus tequila, is it bourbon wins or tequila win?
Ooh. Ooh. I don't know. I want to get to that one. That's a good one.
I like that. You know,
to go back to that other question you had a minute ago. Please. 2010 University of Texas national championship game against Alabama.
Yes.
Our quarterback gets dinged on the goal line early in the opening drive, and he's out. We get beat. Ooh, we didn't have our starting quarterback for the rest of the game. What would have happened? That was a
what if hurt.
Ah.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So
what about UT basketball? Have you ever historically gotten hardcore about that, or has it only been football?
I'm getting more hardcore.
Interesting.
Yeah, because I'm getting to be friends with our coach Chuck Smart. I've gotten to know some of the young men on the team, and
so you're starting to get in more.
And we're building an arena, which I'm
part of.
Spiritual culture in over there, the new arena where the men and women are going to play basketball.
I love that. What about startup culture? I know that, you know, a lot of my friends in startup culture have nice relationships with you. The Silicon Valley, the app culture, like, where do you sit with technology?
I'm leaning and learning into it more now than I ever was before. Friends of ours, Guy O'Siri, introducing me to things and learning a new vernacular is what I'm actually, you know. There are a lot of startups in Austin that some of them I'm reaching out to that I like their product, and they're in Austin, and we could have some part and parcel partnership in between the two of us in a business that I'm starting there in Austin with the Minister of Culture work. So I'm learning more about it.
You're flirting more in that arena.
I'm definitely flirting more and understanding it. It's a new thing. And
if I asked you entrepreneurial spirit, where do you sit today at 50? Were you a lemonade stand kid? Did you hustle that way? Was it more art and storytelling? Has it grown?
I'm more entrepreneur now than I ever was at 50. And it's part, to go back to another word you mentioned earlier, it's legacy choices now. So what are the choices that I can create? Like, this Minister of Culture is a category that I assumed and created. A lot of people think it's political. I'm like, no, it's in the slipstream. It's about values, and it's bipartisan and non-denominational, and it can still also be a business. So at 50, I'm going, what choices can I make that I can hand off to my kids and they can hand off to their kids? That's going to be my shadow that goes on. And I don't know if I'll do more movies, but movies are capsulized. They're little pieces of time. I'm trying to challenge myself to go, hey, the big show is life. It's live. The recorder's always on.
But it's awesome that you like that. I watch a lot of people in all arenas just kind of completely walk away from a thing that was the major stepping stone. I've always liked the idea of, like, you know, I'll go back to movies. You know, to me, like, I started a wine brand last year. I sold it recently, but like, I always kind of knew, even though I really needed to walk away from wine because it was all I did, that I would come back to it. But at that time, you know, call it 2011 to 2019, I just didn't want to as much. And like, you know, and even now I'm like, and I will again in 17 years, or, you know, like, I think people close doors that is usually their first step, almost out of ideology, or out of not realizing that, yeah, cool, you're burnt out now, but don't put a final nail in the coffin. You don't have any clue where you might be in a decade mentally about that thing.
Right. Well, so like, you sold your wine, you were into it. It was a whole obsession. Mm-hmm. You sold it. Was that like your Yankees winning the championship that you put it away, or is it you have it sitting over?
That one's a little sweeter. I started it only 18 months ago. So this is the winery, not my dad's wine store, which he still owns and operates, my family business. I started a winery 18 months ago. That one has a much more warm feeling in my soul. I had two partners in that business, Nate Schroeder and John Troutman. They started as interns for me a decade ago.
Okay.
So the story.
Yeah.
Of like, it just like the thought that the collateral of my skill set could put these two young men who I adore, like younger brothers, in a position that changes the course of their lives, at least financially, which is only a piece of it, but a piece of it, was too romantic to say no when the opportunity came.
Yeah.
That drove me remarkably, in a very serious way. That's what drove that decision.
Well, so that door's always open. That there's no final trophy on that, because those two young men, you're gonna enjoy watching where they go and how they do it.
Even more fun, back to leadership and coaching. I've got 1,000 employees right now that I have at least 60 of my people in that ecosystem of like wanting to rep. So yeah, that there's nothing more fun than loving people. Loving people is a in perpetuity game of happiness. Like, I often make jokes about not liking animals, because A, I probably skew under most people with like dogs and other things, but I really believe it's because my love affair with humans, like walking down the street, I have a warmth towards people, and I really recognize that most people don't go there.
Let's lean into this, to where we are right now and where we're heading. All right. I got asked this the other day. Where do you lie on trust, McConaughey? And I'm like, I hadn't thought about it. And the person asked me, and I said, look, I'm talking to you right now. You have 100% of my trust until you don't.
Same.
I don't think enough of us are looking at the world that way right now.
I agree.
Major distrust and major disbelief, and you come in with zero until you earn it.
I hate that shit.
100%.
I hate that shit. I hate that. Who the fuck are you? Why are you so fucking audacious? Who the fuck made you special enough that another human has to earn it? Fuck you. Where's your humility? I'm 100% trust. As a matter of fact, I fight a lot of time. I need to work on myself to try, like when trust is broken, I'm still trying to come up with empathetic scenarios for the other person. Like, I would be very bad at baseball. I think I'm 7 strikes and you're out. Like, 3 strikes don't even fucking register for me. And that's something. Now, what that's done is also created a subconscious resentment that I've had to become as I continue to go through my process. I'm like, oh, right. I think that it's 7 strikes and you're out. But what's happening is with each strike, there's a little bit of like, you know, fluid going into that bucket of resentment. I might be able to eat it because I'm strong and I don't give a fuck, but I'm building it. So I have to be more thoughtful of having candorous conversations with people I care about so I don't get there.
Yeah.
That's my tweak.
I hear you. I can't allow 7 strikes, but I hear you. That's a resilience. You're going, no, I can handle it. I can handle it. I can handle it.
I really believe that.
If someone does scar me, and on the role of forgiveness and moving on, man, if I see a real sense of retribution and on their end wanting to go, hey, I bogeyed, I screwed up, I'm sorry, I'm very quick.
I love you for that.
I'm quicker than I forgive myself,
brother. I love you for that, and that leads to foundational happiness. It just does. Real quick, because I know you have to run.
Yeah.
I'm just curious. You and social media. Do you use anything? Do you have any?
Yeah.
Burner accounts that say McConaughey is actually awesome. Like, how do you roll with social? Like, which one do you like?
I started leaning in. I started Instagram just I think about a year ago.
Okay.
And you know, I've been flirting with the idea for years.
Okay.
The thing that sounds with me is I was going like, the rabbit hole of that conversation. I've got 3 kids, man. I got a family. It's like they offer me, they always come on, play fantasy football. I'm like, I don't need another hobby. I really don't like it and I want to do it. And the whole Instagram thing, I was like, I'm afraid I'm going to like it a lot and I'm going to do it too much. So I came out and I remember my opening. I said, look, this is going to be a monologue, guys.
Yes, it's a one-way street.
So I don't want to dive into late night looking at a comment on every single thing I said because I'll feel it. And I want to engage in it and get back to the conversation. So I'm choosing about where I have the conversation.
Nice work, Dustin. Do you find yourself following certain people or certain accounts and getting a little bit of like escapism value from it?
A little bit.
Or is it mainly, I'm in the mood to say something and I'm going to just say it and it's a monologue and I'm out.
It's mainly I'm in the mood to share something. Hey, this is a pulse I'm feeling out there in the world right now. This is a pulse I'm feeling in America or something that's going on in my life. I'd like to share this. I will then re-engage with certain people that I will follow or listen to and check in with. But I don't have it. I'm not ready to have that, nor do I know if I ever will be, to have that on my proverbial good morning. Now let me go sit down with my IG world. Because like I said, I got 3 kids and a wife and a job and I like my own solitude and I'd rather do as much as I can live here as I can.
October 20th.
Yep.
That's the date.
That's the date. Green lights. And that's the idea, man. How can we create more than for ourselves and others? As you said, be selfish and selfless at the same time. Those are not contradictions.
No,
what
we
can make the choices that are best for the I, that are also best for the we.
The second you get best for the I, your ability to be a champion of we exponentially grows.
Boom.
Right?
Boom. And where are we misinformed on that? I don't know where along the way people misinformed.
There's a lot of things. There's so much. You know, listen, this is why communication, videos, books, monologues, or somebody like me that posts and spends 8 hours engaging. Like, this is why we need all different versions. One sentence in that book can change the way someone looks at it. Vayner Nation, I know that I have a lot of pride in this. I a lot of my friends or just people that have randomly emailed me, the book PR community very much knows this has been a show that is a substantial driver, and it's because you're curious. And I think if you re-listen the first 10 minutes, clearly if you're getting value out of me, I have some serious confidence that you're gonna get value out of this book. So green lights, October 20th, make sure you pick it up. McConaughey, thank you so fucking much for being on the show.
I enjoyed it, Gary. Look forward to the next time, bud.
Can't wait. Take care of yourself. Bye-bye. Cheers. All right, episode's over. Please leave a review and subscribe up on Apple. It would mean a lot to me. Thank you very much.
Hey, podcast. Joe from Team Gary here. Today's highlighted review is Love Your Ocean Spray Hot Take by Giuseppe. Your latest Hot Takes podcast was amazing. I'd love if you gave us more small doses like that. Super informative, really made me understand advertising in a way that I didn't before. Thanks, Gary. Keep those reviews coming. We could highlight yours next.